cliffcentral.com.
Well, we've got a guest who's going to pop in and help us out with some stuff that we picked up on in the news. The debate on comprehensive sexuality education, which is a component of the life orientation curriculum in South African schools. Been a very controversial subject among parents of school-going kids. I think we can all agree that there is an urgent need to increase and improve the amount of quality comprehensive sexual education.
Hugely.
At schools, because we have people who just don't understand.
It's actually not even... even a lot is not enough.
Yeah, but whose responsibility is it? Because we know we have derelict parents who can't teach kids anything. There are a lot of parents in this country who are just really shit at being parents. So if there are parents who can't do it, should that responsibility be taken on by schools? Because otherwise these kids grow up not knowing a damn thing and they become a problem to the rest of us. You know, it's obviously something worth thinking about. Who could possibly be against this? Well, Dr. Ellie Rosen is a medically trained sex educator. Their focus is on promoting access to healthcare for all people through education, both the patient and the healthcare provider. They're here to tell us more about CSE, but specifically who some of the people and organizations are that are opposing this. So, Ellie, welcome. First of all, it is Ellie, right?
It's Eli.
Eli. You see, I asked Sia to find out for me. Shit. Sorry, Eli. Nice to see you.
Good morning, Gareth.
Cool. So tell me, have I outlined the problem here in a very basic sense that comprehensive sexual education at schools is a massively touchy subject for some people? But well, it shouldn't really be. It has to form part of basic education.
I think what we need to understand is that a lot of parents are coming to this from a place of concern out of love for their kid.
Okay.
Right?
Sure.
That's the first step. The first step to understanding why people are as upset about it as what they are. And that quite often they are working on an assumption about what CSE actually is without actually knowing what comprehensive sex education actually entails.
Okay.
And they often think that this is something that is going to sexualize their children, that it's going to give kids, if we give kids information about sex, they're going to want to go out and do it.
It's like, don't put those ideas in their head, also they'll
absolutely
do it.
As if they never have these conversations with friends of theirs at school.
Let's keep kids as ignorant as possible because that's going to keep them safe. But all the research and absolutely everything that has been done around sexuality of children says that when we empower children with information, that they're able to make better decisions about
sure.
their sexual well-being, and they are actually making a choice about their sexuality that is more deliberate and more informed. And I always say, you know, we mustn't think that ignorance and innocence are the same thing.
Correct.
Kids can have information and stay innocent because they're more likely to be intentional about what they're doing rather than ending up in situations that they didn't expect, where things happened too fast, too overwhelmingly, and they weren't able to stop it before they actually got into that situation because they never saw it coming.
I can understand that the mindset, though. I mean, if I just think back to myself, I was in a 13-year-long relationship from the age of 13. And my mom approached me and said, I think that we need to get you onto the pill.
Oh.
And I was not sexually active at the time. And as soon as she said that, I thought maybe I should be. And so I did become.
Oh. Well, that's an interesting story, but I don't know that that's necessarily
no. And obviously, there wasn't an education and informing element to
yeah.
that whole thing.
I mean,
so it was just a fleeting mind.
How much different would it have been for you if your mom had actually sat you down in that moment and said, well, listen, this is your options as far as your relationship is concerned, and don't ever feel that you have to be pressured into doing something that you're not ready for and that you're not comfortable for about.
Well, this will come as a shocker, but she was from an era where she felt it was a duty for a woman to be like that with a man.
Jeez.
Like she even said to me, you know, he's not going to stay around for that long if you aren't sexually active with him.
Wow.
Whoa.
Mm.
Wait, how old
That's
were you when
very,
she said that?
Very, very strange and archaic.
I was probably 16.
Shucks.
Damn.
Yeah. So that exists. It's not a fallacy.
Absolutely. And we all come to our sexuality from our unique backgrounds.
Sure.
With all the information that we have about how the world works and how relationships work. And we all come to like these discussions about sexuality with a lot of baggage. So some of it includes these like really sexist ideas of what relationships are and how they work and how we are supposed to behave within relationships and what's expected.
Yeah, and there are bad traditional ideas, and there are some that are supposedly meant to protect people. But really, there's also a lot of shame attached to sex for some people. Some parents, they're just incapable of talking to their kids about this stuff honestly.
Absolutely.
Sometimes there's way too much pressure on the school to have to teach kids everything because the parents just have nothing to do with them. Or there's the opposite end where the parents say, I don't want the school to have anything to do with teaching my kid about this stuff. I will do it and I'll do it my way. It's a hard, this is a really tough road to navigate, right?
Yeah, it is. And being able to hold every child in their reality within a school environment takes a certain amount of skill. It takes practice and it takes a lot of awareness. And this actually is where my biggest concern about comprehensive sex education being under the guise of life orientation comes in, because we are expecting life orientation teachers to take over this function of being a sex educator without any further training, with the support being these scripted lesson plans that were released last year. But essentially, quite often the ALO teacher comes from a psychology background, but definitely not a medical background, definitely not a sex education background, definitely not a comprehensive sex education background, and definitely not a background where they're actually able to navigate these social complexities around sexuality. I mean, this is what I do day in and day out.
Yeah, and but we don't have 5 million of you.
And we don't have 5 million of me. And that really is means that we do need more people doing it. But what I would prefer to see is having somebody like me come in and be the district sex educator and do the sex ed for all the schools in a certain district.
So tell me what.
And have specialistly trained sex educators navigating these topics and supporting the school.
Who are you arguing with at the moment? I mean, who are the people who are on the other side of what you're saying? And what is their argument?
I think there is a combination of people who are concerned parents. I think that is the biggest group of people out there who I don't think we're even arguing. I think quite often we've got the exact same motivations. We want the well-being for kids, front and foremost. But how we're going to approach that differs. And we have the parents who are like, I would rather do this at home. But we need to understand that not every child has access to an adult who has the information about sex, the law in South Africa, we've got complex consent laws, we've got complex laws around access to abortion, we've got complex law around access to healthcare, and most parents do not have that information in order to pass it on to their children.
So Eli, what about government? I mean, what is their take on all of this?
So written into the Children's Act, every child has a right to healthcare, and in that healthcare, sexual and reproductive healthcare is included, which means that every child over the age of 12 has a legal right to accurate information about their sexual and reproductive health, which means that even in a school environment, a school would be able to provide sex ed to the children in that school without having to get the permission of the parents involved, because the child has a legal right to that information without parental consent, which means a child who had to go to a clinic for HIV testing, for accessing contraceptives, to access condoms, would be able to do that already under the law of South Africa without having to get their parents' consent to do so.
Do you think that's a good piece of legislation? I mean, you're in favor of it, or do you think maybe the age should be slightly higher or slightly younger? Are you satisfied with that being the law? If you could, in an ideal world, have redone the legislation, would you redo it in any different way?
Well, the legislation also has a preamble which says that it does not support early sex at all in any form, and that children should be given the information that they need in order to make their decisions about their sexual health first and foremost. So our very, very first obligation as adults in South African society is to make sure that children are empowered with knowledge.
And that goes against a lot of cultures in South Africa where, you know, it's a right to adulthood. They're calling it that, but it's at the age of 13 that kids are having sex in order to keep with the traditions.
Yeah. Well, also, I mean, like, if we think about, like, what sexualizes children and how children become sexually active, we have kids who are accessing pornography from about the age of nine. Like, I go into schools and I'm talking to a group of it would be grade eights. And I say, how many of you have smartphones? And they all put up their hands.
Yep.
And then I say to them, how many of you have had your parents have a conversation with you about boundaries, what you're allowed to use the smartphone for and what you're not allowed to use it for? How many of your parents have told you that you're not allowed to look at porn on your cell phone? And I think I've had one child put their hand up in a class of 35. Okay, so we assume that kids understand the boundaries, and we assume that kids know what's right and wrong, but we're also avoiding having these conversations because we don't want to sexualize children. But in fact, what we're doing is we're actually opening them up to a world of vulnerability, because we're not giving them the opportunity to engage critically with these topics before they end up with their friend showing them something or sharing explicit content on a group WhatsApp message, which happens far more often than you would believe.
Sure, it's such a minefield, though. What are they covering in CSE in the different grades at the moment?
Okay, so it depends on if you're looking at those scripted lesson plans.
Yeah.
In the earlier age groups, it's a lot more about body function. This is what my body is. This is how it works.
Yeah.
This is the introduction to basic concepts. And then as you get older, it becomes more nuanced. You start having conversations about risk, about behavior. But also one of the biggest parts of CSE is talking about relationships and how are we sexual citizens in the context of society. Because we're not sexual beings alone. We aren't isolated from the rest of society. And how do we move into our sexuality in a way that actually is healthy for everybody involved? So we start looking at relationships, we start looking at the more complex topics around gender and sexuality, around same-sex relationships. We start looking at topics around, like, all the touchy stuff, like masturbation, access to termination of pregnancies. All of these really the necessary conversations to have, that I think people often shy away from because they're not sure how to actually even start the conversation. But you'll see that all of these build on top of each other, right? None of these, I think quite often people feel like they want to take one of these topics out of context of this larger conversation and get stressed out about this one topic.
Yeah.
And they forget that this is not something that is going to be spoken about every week in life orientation, and that they're only going to be having these conversations around masturbation. And it's going to be for 45 minutes a week, every week, for like the next 12 years. And in fact, it's actually more likely to be about 45 minutes.
I know some people who could have benefited from having those conversations for 45 minutes.
Yeah,
and more likely, it's actually going to be a couple of hours a term, building on the knowledge base, which is then expanded over years to become more nuanced and more, give a bit more information as children mature and grow into their understandings of these things.
What are the best practices worldwide? I mean, do we have the life orientation and then the comprehensive sex education stuff come from any other countries? Which countries are we looking at in terms of successes? And Sia, do you remember what you learned at school in terms of this stuff?
I learned it all at school.
because this just speaks to the type of parenting I had, though. One of probably the only sex talks my parents and I have ever had was my dad sitting me down in the lounge, and I was probably in like grade two, and he says, so you talk about sex at school, right? I was like, yep. So he says, do you have any questions? I'm like, nope. He says, okay, you can go now. And then I got him and left. So really for me, like everything was discussed and was never crude. It was never crass. It was a holistic approach to learning about sex. And I'm grateful for that, actually.
Leanne, do you remember what you learned?
Yeah, my mom bought me two books.
Oh, no.
The reason why she bought them was because we were just driving in the car and I was thinking about things. And I mentioned that it must be really painful for an elephant to give birth. I said, can you imagine the pain of that coming through your bum? And that's when she realized I needed a book because they weren't coming out the bum.
Right.
So she gave me two books. And they had actual photographs of actual pubic hair and kids growing up and the phases and boobs and different sizes. And yeah. I was so grateful that she didn't have to sit with me and go through it. I could just do it myself. And then we didn't speak after that because that was just enough.
You remember yours?
My mom's very, very open. And she's obviously a medical professional, so of the mind. So she, very open from very early.
Okay.
Yeah, and no, my mom's got no holds barred. No,
so she was just like, here are the facts, get with it.
No, let's, yeah.
And you, Gareth?
I don't really remember. I mean, I think that at school we had some kind of sex education and they give you those horrible like diagrams of what people look like if you did them in cross section. You know what I mean?
I do.
But also we covered a lot of it in biology.
Yeah.
But it was a different time. Our teachers, I've just got a question for Dr. Rosen. So we obviously live in a religious country, right? And yes. I mean, this is a conversation nobody ever wants to have, how demonized the notion of sex is within that space. And we live in a Christian-Judean country, whether we like it or not, our framework is that. So do you face any challenges with those particular institutions? With, I mean, by South African standards, what you're talking about is revolutionary, right? I would imagine.
Well, you would think so, but the funny thing is that this conversation can be contextualized for each child. This conversation needs to hold the religious child in their belief system, in their value system, in their own morality. But we can't only have the conversation for the religious child. We also need to have the conversation for the sexually active child. We also have to have the conversation for the child with a disability. We also need to have the conversation for the LGBTI child. We also need to have the conversation for the child who has come from a child-headed household and does not have an adult in the house to ask these
questions.
By
the way, if I never wanted to have kids before, you've just given me extra reasons to not want to have them.
Right?
Oh, God.
And we need to hold everybody's reality. Yeah. And we need to be able to have this conversation sensitively for every single child. And yes, that takes a lot of effort and it takes a lot of practice. But I don't think it's impossible. And when we do have this very religious background, we can still have a conversation about how does your body function? Yeah. What is it that you're looking for from a relationship? Just because you get married does not automatically mean that the relationship that you're going to be in is going to be a healthy relationship, or that you are not going to end up in some sort of toxic situation. It does not mean that you're going to be protected from gender-based violence. It doesn't mean that any of these things are automatically going to be taken off the table. So we still need to have in-depth conversations about what relationships look like, what a healthy relationship is, how does sex fit into a relationship, what is right for you. And that is always my take-home message. What is right for you? Because we need to have children making decisions about their sexuality when the teachers, preachers, and parents aren't there.
Yeah. All right, well, Eli, I've got a couple of questions here. Riet wants to know, apart from the obvious medical and physical information, does the sex education include the positive aspects of sex? How to know and explore your body without shame, how to have pleasure responsibly and legally? And number two, how can you be trained as a sex educator for the purposes of this system?
So currently, there is no one institution that's doing any sort of sex education degree or anything like this. I ended up falling into it because of my medical background and the fact that I worked with my business partner who was a nurse who was doing essentially family planning since the mid-90s. And through working with kids and asking them, what do you want to know, we developed this curriculum. Now, in 2015, I think it was, the World Association of Sexual Health wrote up the Madrid Consensus document, which was basically a document which looked at what needs to be included in a sex education curriculum in order to make it comprehensive, and that it would actually help children be able to navigate their sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is when we looked at the curriculum that we had developed organically through the questions of children, we found that it aligned absolutely perfectly with this world standard from the World Sexual Health Association, which means that if we actually just ask kids, what do you need to know? We are already taking a step forward into being able to provide them the information that they really need in order to make their decisions.
Mm.
Because if we don't answer those questions, where are they going to get that information from? They're going to get it from their peers and the internet.
And obviously you say there isn't one body that governs all of this stuff. But if people wanted to get involved in sex education, I mean, again, there are probably certain qualifications and there's a certain amount of time that needs to be spent figuring these things out with professionals.
Absolutely. So if you are looking to get into sex education, you can either go from a medical background, which is where my background is, or you can go from a public health background.
Mm.
One of my other facilitators has a degree in public health. You can also come in from a psychosocial background, so a psychology degree or something like that. But I would recommend getting involved with the various different sexual health organizations in South Africa, organizations like SASHA, the South African Sexual Health Association. There is also an African Sexual Health organization. So there are existing organizations who are working in the field of sexual health.
And that first question about positive, you know, sexual health and kind of exploring your body, knowing what the limits are, knowing what the legal
and the pleasures are.
Pleasure is often one of the things that isn't talked about in sex education, because we want to medicalize it, right? We want to say
it becomes so sterile.
We want to take this idea of, okay, if we only give kids the basic medical information, they'll figure the rest out by themselves.
They won't be as intrigued.
But if we ask kids, why do people have sex? Why do people have sex? What answers do we get?
What do you get?
Because it's fun.
Mm.
Yeah.
They know. They know that there's pleasure. They know that people are doing it because it is something that they want to do, because there is an exploration, there's a curiosity, there's a enjoyment factor. So it's not like they don't understand this already. So talking about pleasure, talking about knowing how your body works, because your body is different to everybody else's body and everybody's map to pleasure looks different. And the only way you can actually figure out what your map looks like is by actually figuring out by yourself. And so masturbation is one of the ways that kids can learn how to use their explore their sexual body in a way that is safe. There is no sexual risk. There is no STI risk. There is no pregnancy risk, you know, and they can actually start being curious about their sexual health and how they work as a human being without feeling that they have to automatically get involved with another person in order to experience that.
Yeah, it put means themselves at risk.
It means that they're able to kind of take ownership of that part of themselves without feeling like there is a time limit or a ticking clock that's going to expire, and that if they don't do this thing now, they're never going to have another opportunity, because I see a lot of that with young people.
You know, it's also quite interesting. You made me remember something else now from these books that were given to me. At the time, my mom was trying to raise me as a Christian, and she was trying very hard.
Hallelujah.
And these books were written by Christians, and masturbation wasn't mentioned in these books.
Well, you know what? That's always one of those conversations, that's again a touchy topic, because from a religious perspective, there are a whole bunch of understandings about masturbation being wrong. But quite often when we look at this religious perspective, it conflates pornography use and masturbation. And we start seeing these, like, they take the context of normal body exploration, normal body touch that happens as part of a child's sexual development. And this is a well-documented thing. This is not something that is being sucked out of the thumb. You know, we know this about children. We know that they have curiosity about their genitals. They're able to feel pleasure in their genitals from the time that they are absolutely tiny, from the time that they are babies. As a matter of fact, fetuses have been having erections and having vaginal wetness in the uterus. You know, I mean, like, before they were even born. This is not...
We're still learning.
This is not a new thing. But when we actually start having this conversation about what masturbation is, everybody always wants to jump into, my kids are going to be watching porn and they're going to be masturbating obsessively. And absolutely not. That's not what masturbation should be for a child. First of all, they should not be accessing pornography at the age of 12, 13, 14 years old. The legal side of that is that kids are only allowed to access porn once they are no longer kids. You know, you have to be over the age of 18 to access porn. Our age of consent in South Africa is 16. So you would be able to have sex before you're allowed to access porn by law. Put that into perspective. Yeah. So now when we actually have conversations about, like, religious side of things, we can also say this is something that some people choose to do. And it's not going to cause any harm for you to do it, and it's not going to cause any harm for you not to do it. And it is your own personal choice as to whether or not you decide to masturbate. But I always add in a sexual health component. If you do choose to masturbate, it's a great time to learn how to use lubricants and condoms, because the first time you need a condom shouldn't be the first time that you're trying to put one on, right?
How bad is the state of sexual education, and how ignorant are kids in this country generally, based on your experience now?
Okay, so I think a lot of parents say we want to do this at home, but whenever I go into a class, I ask for questions. Sometimes I get them anonymously ahead of time.
Yeah.
Sometimes I get them in the class. Because it's a dynamic conversation, right? And things will pop up. And if every parent was doing sex ed at home, I would not have a job. I would not have questions. I would not have kids asking me things when I do a sex ed intervention.
And it's not but it's not only kids. I mean, 40-year-olds.
How often do I have the teachers coming to me afterwards and saying, I had no idea what a menstrual cup was. Can you show me a little bit closer how those work?
Yeah.
Oh, it's time for me to wake up.
So, Dr. Isn, am I being too simplistic to say we should completely be pushing things like religion out of the way so we can actually get the sort of stuff? Because it does not get in the way of such great work, or is that too simplistic a way to look at it?
I don't think we can separate these things out because religion fundamentally underpins how people experience their sexuality. And I think that is very valid. I think everybody...
And you can't be determining someone else's value system.
No, but I mean, in the classroom, we're teaching... Okay, but
you
fair enough.
I trust the government a whole lot less if I were a parent than you do. But it seems to me like what you're saying is it's complicated. You have to weigh up all of these things and try to accommodate as much of it as possible.
Absolutely, and we need to make sure that kids are able to understand these complexities within their own selves. Because how often do we have a child who says, like, well, I came from a very religious background and my parents were trying to raise me as this super orthodox person, but my own experience of myself went contrary to what I was taught at home. And therefore, instead of being able to integrate these two different things, I had to reject one or the other. And we don't want that schism. We don't want people having to tear themselves in half to be able to navigate their sexuality. We want people to integrate a healthy sex life, a healthy sexuality, a healthy understanding of their own selves, as well as their backgrounds, their religion, their moral system, their values, their what their parents have told them, what society tells them, but at the same time still having that critical voice that says, this thing that I heard does not apply to me, or this thing that I heard actually causes me harm. So therefore, I can choose not to engage with this one thing that is contrary to who I need to be as a person.
Mm. Well, I'm glad that there is someone who's busy taking an active interest in this and spurring forward what I hope will help kids to be less ignorant, and help parents also to be less ignorant, and teachers, so we can all just figure out the most healthy way forward. I mean, in the end, all you want is a bunch of young people who are confident about themselves, who are not given bad information, who are not misled by any people or in authority,
who don't think they're evil,
and who also are not taught things that they shouldn't be taught at an inappropriate age. It's a very, very difficult field to be able to find general consensus in. So good luck.
I don't think there will ever be consensus, there will always be concerns and stress. But I think that we can definitely move into the future with a little bit more of an open mind, and the fact that sexuality exists whether we agree with it or not. Absolutely. And that this is something that needs to be spoken about.
Do you want to quickly tell us about Sexy Smarts in case people want to find out more about your organization?
Absolutely. Sexy Smarts is our sex ed consultancy, and we work in South African schools all across the country. It was started early in the 90s by our founder, Sister Ruth. She has actually just retired. She will have put in her final hours as far as...
So not Dr. Ruth, but Sister Ruth.
Sister Ruth, yes.
And not Nun Sister.
No, this is Nurse Sister, yes. She's actually a nursing sister and worked as a midwife for a very long time, and through doing family planning ended up going into sex ed. She always tells a story about when she first realized that sex ed was something that she needed to do. She had somebody come in and she said, if I could answer any question that you have without any sort of judgment, what would that question be? And the girl sitting in front of her said, can you get pregnant from oral sex? Can you get pregnant from a blowjob? Okay, and then she realized that this is a conversation that needs to actually be had, because there are so many people with these questions.
Yeah.
And yes, so
now can you? I'm on tenterhooks.
You know, if you're lightning fast and you can do acrobatic tricks, it might be possible.
Well, I always tell kids, you know, there's the reproductive system and then there's the pizza system. Any semen going into the pizza system, which is the tube from the mouth all the way through to the anus, is not going to cause a baby. However, any semen going into the reproductive system, which is anywhere from the outside of the vulva all the way through into the vagina, can cause a pregnancy if there is an egg waiting to be fertilized.
Dun, dun, dun.
And there we go. Okay. How to answer that question without being...
We finally worked it out.
The pizza system versus the reproductive system.
All right. See, that's the way to do it.
Okay. No more pregnancy scares for me.
Well, Dr. Eli Rosen, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and thank you for being part of the show. CliffCentral.com